Hey, everybody. We are currently busy with pre-production in our fourth feature film of the year, which is a relook at The Haunting of the Murder House, found footage style. So we're going to go ahead and do a DBS throwback, which is a scene-by-scene breakdown of The Haunting of the Murder House. Be sure to take a look at it online as it is free to watch.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the DBS Films Podcast. My name is Kellen. With me, as always, is my brother, Brendan. And together, we make movies with DBS Films. In today's episode, we're going into part three of our newest feature film, The Haunting of the Murder House, which you can now see for free on Tubi. And really, in these scene-by-scene breakdowns, we want to go ahead and walk through the entire movie, giving you guys an idea of what we like, what we didn't like, what we might improve. And we highly recommend this as an amazing process for any filmmaker out there. Be sure to go ahead and take a look at our Discord channel online, because we make movies for our fans with our fans. So if you want to get in on that action, if you want a chance to be on set in these movies, be sure to go ahead and check that out. So before we hop right into it, Brendan, you know, I think the big theme here has kind of been we're really starting to get to that execution level and the pacing is moving. There's a lot more wins than losses, which is, you know, essentially what you're going to see when it comes from scene by scene. But the thing I really want to tap into is, you know, going into this film, I think one of the biggest things that we had as an asset was our confidence. And I think the confidence just comes from being there. You know, we've been through multiple movies. This was our 10th feature film. And more importantly, this was a script that we've done before. So I would say even more so than The Shapeshifter, which is our latest film that came after this, that was a new concept. That was a very bold idea. But do you want to talk about it as confidence as a filmmaker? Because I think a lot of people, when they watch movies, you have an impression that this is exactly what the filmmaker wanted to come out on screen. You know, this is exactly what they wanted. There was no problem. When we know realistically, film is all about compromise. And I think when you have the confidence to execute, you can then start to take time to improve the details, because you're not worried about just, will this work? Will this not work? So what are your thoughts on just how confidence as a filmmaker and making movies is really one of the biggest assets you can have, and how, in my opinion, I think our confidence was at the peak going into this film?
Yeah, and I think we executed well on this one. I think that it was a milestone, and the movie that you watched, The Murder House, was pretty much exactly how I had it in my head. And I think this is something that a lot of filmmakers struggle with. They have these grandiose visions of, you know, just crazy stuff that's going on, how they want their actors to act exactly like they have in their head, how they want the story to flow, the music, everything like that. And then when they get to the editing room, they find out, oh, well, you know, I made a completely different movie than the one that was in my head, because it just really comes down to just communication. You have to be able to communicate what's in your head, you know, through all the levels of filmmaking. So it's like you have to communicate with the DP, you have to communicate with your actor. And if you're brand new at the filmmaking process, this can be very, very difficult to do. So, you know, with this one, it took us pretty much, you know, 9 or 10 movies to get to the point where we laid the foundation. I would consider this movie the foundation for what was in my head came out, you know, as the actual movie. With Girl in Cabin 13, we were close, but once again, like the scene with Joe, and there's a couple other scenes that were just a little bit different than what I actually wanted. But I think this provides a huge stepping stone, and I think it's everything that a filmmaker should, or an indie filmmaker should look for, is because, you know, now when I get reviews about the movie, they're all story related. And the easiest thing to do is fix a story, because you just rewrite the script. So there is a level of confidence knowing that, all right, look, I have this script, I have this idea in my head, and I have the ability to film it like, you know, like the exact version that's in my head. That's just, you know, storytelling 101. I'm able to tell the story that I want to tell. So then when I get bad reviews or people point out plot holes or issues with the story, you know, the next time I write that script, or if we do a 3.0 version of this movie, those are the easiest things to change. You know, fixing story problems is very, very easy to do, but usually in order to fix them, you have to be aware of them. And every time you write a script, you're kind of venturing off into new territory. You don't know what's going to work and what's not going to work, which is why usually our 1.0 versions of these movies are a little bit more riskier. Like, for example, The Shapeshifter, it's a little riskier concept. I don't know what people are going to like, what people don't like. With this one, you know, we did it one time. We got feedback on the Suicide House. We did it 2.0 time, which was the Murder House. We got feedback on it. Now, if we do the 3.0 version of this, I know exactly, you know, what I want to fix and how I want to make this a better movie.
Yeah, it really is one of those things where this was being our first, you know, in the sense 2.0 version of a movie. I think that's what leads to a lot of that confidence there. So hopping back right in what we picked out, we have Kai decided to take a step out of the circle, which causes a seizure for him. And, you know, I think I like this scene. I think it gives you a little bit of franticness. Again, it's coming off of the pop scare and the buildup. We did highlight in the end of the last episode that, you know, the seance did drag out a little bit longer when it comes to kind of building that up. But once you get to the crescendo, once you get to basically everyone talking in the panic, and I think one of the good elements with this, the style of this scene was, there's just pure chaos. You know, you have Kai, Tyler, he just falls over, starts having a seizure. You have Harper kind of like just screaming for Dylan. Dylan immediately comes running in. You cut back to me on the radio, just kind of going frantic as well, too. And I think, you know, this was one where after we started editing a little bit more, I think it really kind of shone through that, like, you have the pure chaos moments. You know, those are really, really fast. They move quickly because there's basically three things going on at once. So what would you say about, like, the end of that seizure and just kind of the chaos that comes from not knowing what's happening, having Kai basically, you know, go out cold and then pop up back normal and just give you that end pop scare?
Yeah, I think the seizure scene's pretty good. I don't know what else we'd put in there instead. It was like, all right, it wasn't a pitfall. I don't think it was as good as it could have been. I'm not really sure why. We did get the chaos. We wanted to have it you know, be really fast paced, which is good. We had chaos of, you know, everyone screaming over each other, which I thought was really good. But really the main purpose of that was just to highlight that this is him getting possessed. This was the transformation or the beginning of the transformation of his character into Mo Lester. So I think you just have to kind of figure out how you want to do this scene. And, you know, I thought it was pretty good. But, you know, at the same time, I'm always looking for better ways to do it. And I'd have to go back and look at other possession kind of movies to see that change. But, you know, something needs to happen. Now thinking back on it, maybe this could have been done in the lock-in room sequence where that's the time where he gets possessed and then they pull him out of the lock-in challenge. But I think for what we did, you needed a beat there. And I think we did a pretty good job of just getting him you know, getting that frantic pace that we wanted in the scene.
Yeah. I mean, again, there's always room for improvements, but I would say overall, I thought it was good in the frantic pacing of it. I think the one thing we need to work on is just kind of better dialogue. We're kind of, especially me, you know, repeating the same lines over and over in the van. So we have Kai come up. He's, you know, basically awoke now. We have, you know, kind of a, all right, things are hitting that critical point. And this is a point that we talk about a lot in the movies, where in any horror movie, you're going to essentially get to a point where, you know, push comes to shove and everyone wants to leave. And, you know, the idea is get out now, but they can't. So this was one, I remember when we were writing it, it was kind of like, you know, how do you justify this? And, you know, I think it's a very practical one. I come up there with the key and the key snaps in the lock. You could say maybe it was the supernatural forces kind of adding a little extra oomph to it that caused it snap. Me personally, I've actually broken a key for real on a job. I actually put it in the door, so you can't snap keys if you turn it the wrong way. But basically the key snaps, they're now locked in there, and that kind of progresses it. I think no matter what you do, it's really going to be kind of like, oh, of course that happens. I mean, this scene is essentially the, you trip over a log or you do that horror thing or you drop the keys. So I think overall, you know, it's always going to be tough to, you know, justify what that action is. But I think, you know, the scene itself and kind of the back and forth dialogue. And I also think that Sarah did a really good job in this scene of kind of like, you know, showing her commanding role, showing that she's like, she gets it. She's like, now's not the time. We got to get out of here. We have to protect, you know, Kai. So I think her character shines through from that. I think, you know, again, it's tough because you got to find some, you know, reason why we're staying in there. But what do you think about the door and the lock scene when it comes to just getting through it?
I mean, I like it. I think it's good. It gives them motivation to stay in there because they're essentially locked in. I just really wanted it to be more impactful. And so like, this is, I think, is the whole like premise of this movie, or not premise, but like kind of issue with the movie is it does everything well. It doesn't do anything, or it does a few things like really well, but for the most part, a lot of this stuff is done good or well. But that's absolutely fine. As an indie filmmaker, I will take this movie. If I can make as many murder houses as possible, I will be over the moon. It'll be absolutely great. This is like what our target range is. I think to make a movie better than this is going to be a little bit more difficult for us. We have to be a little bit more seasoned. But for all intents and purposes, this movie did absolutely phenomenal. But now, like, the whole idea of having a 2.0 version is to look at scenes like this and be like, all right, how do we make this like a little bit more spicy? We would need them, or when that key breaks, it should be like a gut punch to the audience, being like, oh, they're so close to, you know, getting out of this house. And then obviously it turns out they can't get out of the house because the key snaps. We didn't really have that gut punch, or at least I didn't feel it. And I think going back and looking back on this and trying to figure out, you know, how we can make this more impactful, whether it's through dialogue, through different shot selections, or just more frantic pace, you know, is just a way to make this a better movie. I mean, if you had Kai completely passed out and he didn't wake up, and then both Kel and Harper are screaming at the door to let them out, let them out. I think right off the top of my head, that'd be a much better scene, because then you would have, you know, the urgency, the stakes of Kai could be dying, and, you know, now they're locked in and Kel's fumbling with the key and breaks it. So it's little things like this to take a good movie and make it really, really good. But once again, like, this is why you make multiple versions of the movie, is because you can sit back from a, you know, a bird's eye view and see these scenes that are like, all right, this is a good scene. You know, how do we make it a great scene?
Yeah, completely agree. So we go from the key scene. And again, this is our nice little smooth transition to Kai not being there. So now we have Kai, who is basically struggling with full on possession, as he is no longer in the he's no longer to be seen. So basically, we now have the scene of we're trying to figure out where Kai is. And this was one of the scenes that I think the best part about this scene playing out to us was that people, for the first time, really were like, he is 1,000% being possessed. And we got the first shot of our DBS mirror, which we're going to be using in our newest feature as well, too. But basically, we have Mo in the mirror. And as it pans, it shows him behind Kai, basically, you know, doing my spooky head tilt to kind of establish that, you know, he's staring. Cuts back to Mo. Mo's now there. It's great looking stills. That it provides as well too, but it clarifies that, okay, he is now gone and possessed. And I mean, if you look at like the Haunting of the Suicide House, the first one, you know, we just had him, he was screaming for a little bit and then he just wasn't talking. There was no clear established point. And if we start from the very beginning of this movie and say possession, 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 and then, you know, we don't say Kai is possessed, we just show the clown me behind him, it really kind of caps it off. And again, you have myself, Dylan, and Sarah looking around as you're weaving these through. So you kind of highlight the fact that they're looking for him, they can't find him, and then you see that he is being possessed. But again, I think the overall takeaway is, you know, we finally hit the nail on the head with proving that it is a single straightforward plot, and that's the most important thing you really want to look at.
Yeah, and I was happy with the reaction of the crowd. You know, they're like, well, what's he doing in that mirror? Like, he's being all creepy. And then you cut it in between, you know, Dylan and Harper looking around, and then the clown actually shows up. And I think that was a great moment to just, you know, move us into the third act. I thought this, you know, like I said before, this movie's a good movie. I think this little sequence here is really great. People love the mirror. The feedback was great. And, you know, probably going to the third act, the most crucial thing for your movie is to make sure that people understand exactly, you know, where you are in the movie and then what's going to happen. And at this point is perfect. Kai is possessed. And what's going to happen is he's going to try and go and kill the other characters. So that raises the stakes. Everyone's on the same page. They know he's possessed. I think we did a really good job with this. And I think this is the difference between, you know, the first attempt at this movie with the Suicide House, where you don't really know, is he possessed or what's going on, because we never really clarified the lore of the story. And I think we really learned from that. And I think we executed really well. And this was just a really cool scene. And it really, you know, gets you going to this climax in the third act, which I think is really well done in this movie. I was really, really happy with it. I think the people who reviewed it really loved the ending sequence, got a lot of action. But we were able to do that because we built the lore all the way through the beginning of this movie, all the way up into this scene. We clarified multiple times that this is a possession scene or a possession movie. This is a possession movie. This is a possession movie. And then finally we get to the point where you see the clown in the mirror and Kai is acting not himself. And you're like, this is it. He is possessed. And we're like, yes, finally we are on the same page with our audience.
Yeah. And honestly, as a filmmaker, that is way harder to do than you might think. So it's definitely really a huge milestone in the sense that we finally got that feedback. So this leads up to our next scene, which is they find Kai in the garage. He's clearly not having a good time. We sit him down and unfortunately Dylan gets his head smashed in. Now, this was a scene that I think, you know, typically when we end up making movies, we usually have one or two scenes in our head as a good scare. You know, we have one already for the next movie we're about to film next week, in the sense of kind of the Joe in the woods or Nelson in the woods scene. If you've seen Into the Forest, is kind of one that we're building off of. But I remember you saying, like, this is one of the scenes I want to do. I basically want to have the hammer hit and then the smash of basically Dylan's head into the table. I think overall, you know, again, special effects is always incredibly expensive. It's always incredibly tricky because not only do you need to get the effect right, you need to get the effect shot right. So it's kind of a two-person job in the sense of executing on it. With that being said, though, I think it was really, really good, you know, for what it was. I think my one takeaway caveat would be almost maybe a few more angles, and then I would have liked it if we had Sarah reacting more and not just cutting back to me. Again, I feel like I kind of ran out of lines pretty quickly, so I'm kind of repeating the same things for a little bit as he's getting mashed in. But I think overall, I think the scene's good, and I think it does achieve, you know, its effect. The biggest thing with special effects is it's so easy to miss on a special effect versus having it work. And, you know, I think this is one that's executed really well.
Yeah, I think for this one, it's good. I mean, it's not great. I think we can definitely do it better. But then it just comes down to do it better, do we just need to get better special effects and pay more money and have a full head mold that can just be smashed multiple times? If that's the case, I mean, some of these molds could be $5,000 to $10,000 for just this one scene. So you got to kind of look at it like, is that investment worth it? Or is it something like Kel said, where you just needed different angles? And I think that's it. I think we just need a little bit more angles, but I really think you got to have all the characters. Dylan and Harper should have been sitting right next to Kai watching this, and then just having that overlapping, like, panic screaming while, you know, Kai's right next to him with the hammer. So you have sort of like the stakes, like he could turn and smash Harper's head in. So I think it was like a dialogue thing as well. I think we didn't necessarily have, you know, the dialogue and the reactions that we needed to really make this a really crazy scene, because it should have built. The audience knows that he's possessed. The audience sees the hammer. They should know what's coming, and none of the other characters know. And I just don't think we built it properly. So I think, you know, the next time we do it, we'll really focus on, you know, making sure this is as good as possible, and then really making sure that, you know, we're getting the best angles for this hammer smash, because that garage was just not, it was very difficult to shoot in that garage. It didn't give me a lot of space in there. It was very cramped, and to like hide the tube in Dylan's hair and then hide his head and do all this stuff, it was kind of difficult to get, you know, everything we needed to get. So I think maybe next time not do it in like a garage, do it in a bigger room. And I think if we just played with lighting a little bit more, I think you could have kind of hid some of that stuff and, you know, just made it more dynamic, kind of let it up to your brain to kind of fill in the gaps almost. And usually if you can do that in a horror movie, it always turns out to be just a little bit better, a little bit scarier, because your own imagination already knows your fears. So I think we made it, it's a good scene. I think we just need to really work on, you know, making this a great scene. And I think it did its purpose. Once again, extremely solid movie. If I can make all my movies like Murder House, I'll be very, very happy. But now it's just like, all right, how do we make this go from good to great?
Yeah, I mean, that's really the case. I mean, this is such a solid baseline for us. And it's kind of now, you know, picking off what's the heightened version of it. So from here, you know, we've talked about it before, kind of from the seance scene. If you really look at it, it all kind of blends together in like a climax. You know, there's not necessarily one heated scene that picks up for, you know, 5-10 minutes. It's kind of a series of scenes and a little bit of a downbeat. We always knew we were going to have kind of the cat and mouse effect is what we were looking at. I think this is one area that, you know, it's location more than anything. You know, we did a great job in making this house look a lot bigger than it actually was. I mean, it really was a case where basically we utilized every single inch of this room, except for probably, no, we actually did, because we even used the one room that I was editing in for a quick shot. So I think because we didn't necessarily have the largest area, we weren't able to pull it off. But basically, we have Harbor giving her speech about, I don't want to die. We have Kellen reassuring her, kind of saying the cops are on the way. And I think in our head, the idea was it would be really scary, because I remember talking about it, if you had me being able to see, but the main character couldn't see. So we had this night vision camera, and she'd go ahead, pick it up, and then kind of be able to see with it. Mo wouldn't be able to see because it's so dark in there. And I think the concept is there. I think the biggest limiting factor was really kind of the house element, because you couldn't have them hiding too much. But then also, I mean, when you look at things and running out of time, I think, you know, again, we did a great job in the production of this and the management of the time, but you're always tight on some things. And I think this was one of the ones where we just kind of threw it together, and it was tough being limited by the house. And I think we just kind of rolled through the scene to get through it.
Yeah. I think when I saw the house and the layout of the house they were using, it just like, this sequence was long. Like I had in the actual script, I had her running around, like going from that closet to pick up the camera was like a huge step. Then when she gets to the camera, she tries to go to goes to the door. She tries to go to another room, and then Mo comes in the room and she's kind of like hiding behind stuff. And he's like looking, and like, I think she's like hiding behind or underneath like a bed or a dresser, and Mo like walks by. So you get all this really cool tension scenes in there. And then it's like a little bit of cat and mouse until essentially, you know, Mo sees her because she steps on the nail. But like in the script, we definitely had it as a much longer sequence. I really wanted it to be long, because if like Mo is on top of her, like breathing while she's hiding around the corner, it's like really cool. And the fact that she couldn't see was really, really cool too. We were just limited by that house. It just wasn't an ideal location. If I were to do it again, you know, just having a bigger house and we could really, you know, move her around and have it make sense, because right now we're kind of flipping scenes, you know, flipping images to make it look like, you know, they're going back and forth, and really they're not. But I love the camera. The night vision camera turned out really well. I think it's really creepy the fact that you can't see what's in front of you, but Kel can. And if I would do this again, I would just do more like almost like found footage style. Like really this whole sequence should have been found footage. And I think it would have been really, really cool just from instead of seeing her face, we see her camera as she's moving through there. I think it would have been really, really cool. With just maybe some like reaction shots of her as like when Mo's like really close to her. But I mean, it's like, look at Jurassic Park. Like it's almost like the raptor scene. If we could, you know, make it similar to that with Mo instead of the raptors, I think, you know, I think we'd have a really great scene. So once again, really good scene, really proud of it, turned out really well. Now it's just how do we really make it a great scene?
Yeah, I think, again, you know, highlighting the theme of we're good, but how do we get to great with it? I think overall, this was one of the more lapses, in my opinion. I think kind of the intro in this scene. But again, I think limiting factors, you know, we've already talked about you get a 3-story house with an attic and a basement. This movie instantly, you know, triples in the sense of quality that we can pull off because it's, you know, you look at it, it's a pretty normal house. It's not pretty scary at all. Murder House is pretty bland. So we have this happen. Unfortunately, Harper runs directly into Mo. Good little scare there in the sense of him popping out. We go to the nail scene, which again, we built this one up where they talk about knocking over the board. We highlight the nail. They walk back into it. This was one that we tried it on set and we didn't quite get what we needed. So we ended up redoing it, reshooting it. Worked out much better the second time. I think it's one of our better special effects in the sense of it's really smooth. It's really clean. If you look really closely, you can see the tube and kind of it's bloody before. But like, I mean, again, special effects are expensive. We're doing a great job in kind of keeping that budget down. And it's one where most people, I feel like, will wince seeing that heel going down there. Mo jumps on her. He gets a kick. But I think you go from a, you know, little downbeat to right away, you're at 100%. You have some blood and gore back into it. And I think it does a really great job of immediately stepping back up into the pace.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, you know, if we were to do this again, as long as we could do the nail on location, I think it'll be better. I've really had to like darken it and kind of really make it look like you can't really see where you are because I think that house had like wooden floors and that pickup shot is actually done on tile. So we had to really kind of hide that kind of stuff. But, you know, once again, it's just, it's good. Like it gets the job done. All I wanted from that was for, you know, the audience to know something that Harper didn't know. And that was that there's a nail behind her. And then, you know, once she steps on it, you know, I wanted the audience to be like, oh, you know, that's gritty. And she can't make any noise, so you kind of have to hold it. And I think that's the reaction that we got. You know, it created way more tension. We could just had him pop out and then wrestle to the ground. But I think that this is just, you know, you're seeing us progress as filmmakers, and we're taking a scene where before I would just had Mo pop out, and I've been more concerned about the pop. Instead, we're kind of making a sequence out of this. He pops out, he pauses. Harper walks back, Mo's looking at her, she steps on the nail, she holds it, makes a noise, then Mo wrestles her down. And it's just, there's more layers to it, there's more dynamic, I think it's just better filmmaking. So, you know, as we move forward, as we progress in our careers, this is something that you're taking something that it's just like a basic scene, you're adding more layers to it. You're adding, you know, more depth and dimension, which just allows the audience member to, you know, resonate and feel for Harper. You know, everyone stepped on a nail or stubbed a toe or felt like a lot of pain. And imagine if you had a killer clown right in front of your face and you did that and you have to like hold that in. I think everyone could identify with that. And that was like what we got. I think we did a pretty good job. Is it perfect? No, but I think we got the audience reaction that I was going for.
Yeah, I think again, it's a little extra oomph to the scene. We get that special effect there. So Mo gets kicked off. Harper runs into the bathroom. He's confused, can't quite hear what it is. Kel finally gets off of doing nothing and runs out of the van. I start running around. I'm able to open the door. And thankfully, we had a good take of me as Mo kind of turning. So like we put it together where it's almost like, oh, he's hearing me breaking into the house, which is why he's not looking for Harper anymore. So that kind of worked out in our favor. Then we have Harper kind of doing the textbook, you know, hey, if you guys find this, burn the house. We also use it as one little time to go ahead and just cement what happened. You know, he was possessed. Don't blame him. All of these things. I think, again, that was kind of a later night shoot. You know, that was one where like it was one of the later scenes that we have. I think Sarah did a great job in it. But again, it was just kind of a little scene to pull in there. I think, in the girl in cabin 13, we did kind of a similar shot to it. So we're essentially reusing that type of shot and people really like that shot, but I think out in the woods, scarier versus huddled in a bathroom. I think there's a few things that I think it did the same purpose, but it didn't have as much oomph or impact as the girl in cabin 13.
Yeah. And I like the final girl monologues. Cause once again, you want to restate everything that's going on heading into the third act, but you should really try and do it heading into the climax, the last 8 to 10 minutes of your movie. We did it really well in Girl in Cabin 13. I think we did it really well in The Murder House. So you know exactly the stakes, which is, it's essentially you want to make sure that the audience is clear that this main character thinks they're going to die. That's like what we're trying to do. And we did in The Shapeshifter, but we had, you know, it's a dialogue. There's two people in it as opposed to one in the final girl monologue. And you're going to have to see what we do in the witch movie, the Into the Forest movie. But I think that this is something very easy, you know, just recap the stakes of the movie, what exactly's happened so that when, you know, if people weren't really paying attention, they know her whole team's dead and they know there's a killer clown in the house with her. And now her job is to, or she thinks she's going to die. She's saying her goodbyes and she's going to make the decision to try and do one last escape. So I think it really clears everything up and makes sure that for one last time, your audience is completely, they understand exactly what's going on. And now, you know, once she goes up and stands up, you know, all right, here it is. This is the final, you know, couple minutes of this movie.
Yeah, I mean, things are picking up. We have kind of that climax. I managed to, with my strength, open up the ply wall, which, yeah, it's kind of a little cheaper fix. You know, I think key snapping, me being able to finally pull off the door, you know, why didn't I just do that in the first place when the key snapped? There's little things that kind of poke up when it comes to just horror movies. But I'm able to get the door open. Unfortunately, though, I get stuck. Had one too many sandwiches on set, and I cannot get in. And I get the attention of Mo. Kai comes up to me with the saw and hacks my head off. And I think this was probably our best special effect on scale. I think, you know, the throat slit looked really good too. And I think maybe pure special effect, I think that one was done better because, you know, maybe the skin color was kind of a little bit off on the head. But on the scale, I mean, this was a fake head filled with guts, filled with blood on a stick. We had one try at it and, you know, it worked out. People were definitely affected by seeing me get my head chopped off. And it was also really fun being the person to do the sawing as well. So I think as the big bang in it and getting sawed off, you know, even one of the comments, one of the reviews was like, it's head loose. Come on, head loose, kind of like a Footloose joke. So I think it works. And this is something that people are looking for in a horror movie. And I think one of, you know, I've mentioned it before, I think one of our biggest lacking things is special effects, but for a very good reason, because you want to get everything else done and scale into special effects. You don't want to, you know, spend all of your money on special effects and you film it wrong, or spend all your money on special effects and your plot is terrible and no one gets to the end of the movie. So I think it makes sense, but I think this was one that we did a really good job on. Because again, this was one take. I mean, you screw that one up, Brendan, we're looking at a very painful retake process.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm very happy with how this one came out. But I mean, just to give you an idea, like if we were to do this on, if we were to really be like, all right, look, we want to, you know, invest in this and really make this head chop really, really cool. I mean, you're looking at $8,000 to $10,000 to build like a full silicone mold with, you know, Kel's hair, his skin color, with guts and a skeleton and the gelatin stuff, and then have enough of them that you can do this multiple times so you get like a really good take. And that's just not feasible. I mean, we could do it and it'd probably look absolutely incredible, but there's other things that suffer from this movie that are easy to fix without, you know, having this giant sequence. I think it needs to be there, which is what we did. I thought we did a really good job executing it, but when I think a lot of indie filmmakers, they get hung up on this one thing where it's like, I have to invest all my money into like either this special effect or this camera or this lens or this, you know, this actor, when really, yes, that might help, but the rest of your movie, there's going to be issues that are just, you're not going to see that are going to cause, you know, your movie to suffer. One little thing, spending money on one thing does not, you know, make a great movie. And I see this all the time in indie films where they'll, you know, they're going to have something that you can tell they spent a lot of money on, or they did it, or, you know, they're like, this is the thing that they want to put their time and effort in. And then the rest of the movies just suffers from a lot of other problems. Now, on the flip side of that, I've seen a lot of movies where I'm like, all right, like, here comes the climax, it should be really cool, and then they cheap out on it. So I think there's a middle ground, and I think we hit it pretty well. I think, like, once again, all I was trying, uncomfortable feeling from the audience that this guy's getting his head chopped off, and I think we got that. You know, finding the sounds was almost impossible. It took me weeks to try and figure out, like, what sounds we could use, because actual sawing of bone does not sound like you think it does, and sawing through flesh does not sound like you think it does. So that sound effect is a whole bunch of combinations of just random things of sawing different things, but they were nowhere near flesh and bone. So I think audio, you have to kind of, you know, be aware of that as well. But I think we did a good job with this. You know, I think it was, for the budget of this movie, for the type of movie we were trying to make, all we were looking for is to, you know, get an uncomfortable feeling from the audience member and to reward them and show them, all right, like, this is a horror movie. There's going to be some blood and guts. And you can see that in the reviews we got. Like, people are happy that we did have special effects and we had blood and there's gore, because that's what they expect, you know, coming from a horror movie. I mean, even if you go back and watch the 70s and 80s horror movies, which I love, a lot of the special effects are kind of cheesy. But the fact that they're there is what makes the difference between, you know, having a movie that people enjoy. As long as you're attempting them and giving the attempt, you know, the time and the money it deserves, as opposed to try and hide it. Or, you know, I mean, Mo could have walked in, or like Harper could have walked in there and just seen, you know, Kel's head on the floor, and we could just cut the whole sawing thing. And I think the audience would have felt cheated. So I'm happy with how it turned out. I'm happy with the reviews. I think, once again, you know, for what we were trying to do with this movie, we did a good job.
Yeah. I mean, I really think it is something where this was probably the riskiest shot of the film, and, you know, we execute on it, and exactly what you said is true. So now we basically have the last little scene of Harper, you know, running away, not being able to open the door. I really like this one. You know, one, we had a good behind-the-scenes shot of it, where it just kind of really establishes her not being able to get out, but you have her struggling, she's helping, completely, you know, futile. You have Mo slowly walking towards her, and then you get yanked, and the door shuts. So that's kind of the end of Harper. You know, real quick, what are your thoughts on just that little cherry on top? You know, again, we kind of blew through our special effects budget after that time, so you got to do a pull away, and pull aways are always good. And I think the way the door slammed afterwards and shut, it was a nice little, you know, chef's kiss on kind of the climax.
Yeah, we had a couple, I think we had three different variations in this. And I'm a big fan of, you know, if you don't know what's going to work, having a couple variations. I believe we had one where Mo gets her and she drops the camera and you watch him like pull her away. We had a variation where she tries to hide like in a closet, and something similar like what we did in Suicide House. Mo goes back and forth and then opens it and then kills her. We had one where she takes, she goes and hides and puts like a cover or a sheet over her. And then like Mo does the classic horror thing where she, you know, is like hiding under the covers, trying not to breathe. And then Mo pulls it down and his head's like right there. And that's kind of how we end the movie. But when we locked in that door and we actually looked at that small little window there, That was one of our variations, was to just try and get her really close to the door, trying to just have one last, like, you know, scream of help. And when I framed that up with the camera, we didn't even try the other variations because I was like, this is great. This will definitely do it. And, you know, shout out to Sarah. She did a great job. She had fear in her voice. You know, just that whole thing of all she needs to do is get through that door and she could be free and she doesn't have to deal with this situation anymore, but she just can't. So she's like so close to the finish line, but she can't cross it. To me, is really cool. And I thought we did a really good job with that. I like the slam. It gets us into the final epilogue really nice. So I think I really like this scene. I think it's good. Good trailer bait, good social media bait. I think that this I'll give this a great. I think this is a solid ending to this movie.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, nice. You get a good special effect. You get this. And we always say the intro is super critical to get them hooked. And then the climax is really important for getting those reviews. So we got our epilogue now. We have Wally coming in, being the next wave of streamer trying to figure out what happened here. Basically, we just wanted to have originally the idea was that the cycle continues. You know, he comes in. He's like, guess what's going to happen? We're going to find it. And basically, as soon as we were done filming, as we were packing up, I remember us being like, you should have had Mo pop out. And we didn't. So we're just kind of watching it, reviewing it, seeing how it works, seeing, you know, all right, this is where it's at. And then we even asked our Discord and the super fans, hey, would it be all right if Mo popped out here? Like, what would you think about this? Because if you think about it, it doesn't make sense. He's not an actual person. He's possessing. All of those logic things come about. But the overwhelming answer was do it. And we did it, and it works perfectly, and people love it, and it's a nice little oomph scare at the end. And honestly, I think it's one of the best, like, that lighting that we had the chance to do at a completely different house, in my opinion, with the flashlight just on Mo, looks probably the best. Like, it's one of the best angles of seeing him. Looks terrifying. So, you know, do you want to talk about that scene? And then again, of how, you know, when we fix movies, it's not major things. It's not like we're redoing the entire scene. Like, if you look at the, you know, Morgan Estate, if you look at Devil in the Room, it's usually a scene here, a clip here, but having that clip and being strategic about it has such an impact. I mean, it's literally, you know, a few seconds. It did require us to do a little bit of clever thinking on, you know, what motion gets us to kind of get to that point, but really that half a second of footage, you know, triples the value of that scene by far.
Yeah, I like it. And I think it's just, you know, it's one of the rules of making horror movies. It's better to just go, you know, faster and, you know, go as hard as you can and have as many scares and crazy stuff as possible, even if it doesn't really make any sense. In the overall lore of this movie, it doesn't really make any sense. But we've done a lot of things in our movies that don't make a lot of sense. And nobody really picks up on it. Like, they just don't care. As long as it's not some crazy plot hole, usually you can get away with it. And I think that's what I've learned, is like, I'll analyze this movie so much and I'll be so concerned about certain things that nobody ever notices. No one ever really brought up, you know, the secret room. Like, we did a lot of work on just making sure the secret room kind of makes sense. Like, why the police not find it? Nobody brought that up. Nobody brought the fact that there's like, they could just busted the little glass hole in the door and just escape that way. There was like a little glass door in the hole. They might have got cut up, but at least one of them could have got out. And there's like some other various like plot holes in there that I was concerned about that I tried to cut around, and really didn't really matter. No one brought that stuff up. So I think as long as you make it a movie that's engaging, that people are, you know, into the moment, they're in the movie, they like the characters, they like what you're doing, there's action, I think they're willing to forgive a lot of stuff, especially on the indie level. So, you know, rule one, don't be boring. And I think that this movie, I think it was really well paced. I think it was not boring, and it had a lot of tropes and stuff that horror fans, you know, are coming to expect. And I think they were rewarded for, you know, finishing this movie. I think the only issues with the reviews is just people were expecting, you know, a Blumhouse production. They were expecting $5 to $10 million movie. And that, unfortunately, is just, you know, something that we can't cheat. Will we get better with each movie? Yes. But I mean, that that's a gap. That's a tough gap that, you know, is tough to pick up. So overall, really like this movie. If I can make, you know, if I can continually make movies that are on the same level as Murder House, I mean, sign me up. I'm ready to do it. This movie was such a fantastic movie to shoot, such a fantastic movie to edit. And then, you know, obviously the reviews and the distribution and the just the overall sales and how well it performed is just, I mean, I couldn't ask for anything better. This exceeded my expectations on pretty much every single front. So I'm super happy with everyone who's a part of this project. I'm really thankful. And for the first time, I think we really turned out a high quality indie movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing is like details only matter if your movie's boring and people are looking for, you know, kind of what's going on. That's when they really kind of pick it apart, because, you know, it is something you can kind of have, like, you know, analysis paralysis of going through your movie and saying, what does this make sense? What doesn't make sense? At the end of the day, it's a horror movie. You know, it's there's going to be some leeway there. So, you know, not a single person really mentioned that or brought that up. And I thought it was a really, really great, you know, climax to it. So in wrapping up, I think kind of just want to get the general thoughts on it. You know, feels like, as you were mentioning, as I agree with, is this was a very, very solid base that we now have with the Murder House. I think overall, in my opinion, if I'm looking at it, I think it suffers a bit from production value, in the sense of just having one location, one color scheme. Doesn't really change up much. You know, I watched The Rough of Shapeshifter again literally yesterday, and it's just beautiful. You know, it's nice having some daylight, it's nice having different scenes. It can kind of be a little bit more refreshing in that sense. But I think overall, you know, this is such a good concept that this is one where, you know, if you had to be the most sure, like, hey, if we increase the production value, what movie's going to do really good? It's this movie. You know, like I said, you get a three-story house with a basement and an attic, and you're good to go.
Yeah, and I think it's important because, you know, every time you make a movie, it's a risk. And to put, you know, tens of thousands of dollars down on something, on like a first concept, a first time trying to make this movie, you don't know, number one, if the movie's going to be any good. And number two, you don't know if people are going to actually like the movie. And number three, you don't know like what the sales figures are going to be. So you can make a really, really good movie and then it doesn't sell and you don't get your money back. Or you can completely screw up the concept and don't get your money back. Or you can make something that just doesn't appeal to people and you don't get your money back. So it's a super risky thing to do anything indie films, just in general. And now the fact that, you know, I've done this movie twice, the third time, like Kel said, all we need is a really nicer location. I think having a creepy old house will really give it that production value that a lot of people, I think, are complaining about. Because it does look like a nice little house. Like, it's not, there's nothing scary about this house. You need something like The Conjuring. I think just having that would elevate this movie to the next level. And I think, you know, I'm willing to invest that because I know, number one, we can make a really good movie with this script. And number two, you know, people really like this movie. It sold very, very well. People are attracted to this. So it's just an easier conversation for me to have, saying, look, I'm willing to scale this up because I know we can make a good product. I think we just got to change a few little things around, as far as like where the screenplay, or like how it's, certain scenes happen, like just move them around a little bit, focus a little bit more time on, you know, taking some of those good scenes and making them great. But, you know, you have the formula here, you have the pieces for a successful movie. I think, you know, just needs a really good location, probably needs a little bit more special effects work, and then just a couple story things that need to be fixed up a little bit. But then I think you can have a really, really good movie. So, you know, we're probably going to end up shooting this again, this one again next year. So you'll get to see the Murder House 3.0. And, you know, hopefully it's just, it's the product that, you know, I want in, and I have in my head, something that's really, really good, a really good horror movie. Because this one was really, really solid. And I think it just, to go from good to great, just needs just a little bit more love and a little bit more money and just small little areas. But the formula for success is there.
Yep, And that's going to go ahead and do it and wrap up our newest feature, The Haunting of the Murder House, which again, you can see for free on Tubi. Be sure to go ahead and take a look at us online. Take a look at our Discord channel if you want to be part of these movies, because we make movies for our fans, with our fans. But until then, have a good one.